welcome to everyone watching and listening online, to everyone gathered here in this place. And it is so good to see that so many more are gathered here in this place. Today, I am launching a new summer sermon series. Try saying that three times fast. I've practiced that so many times. It's a new summer sermon series that will take us through some of the high and low lights of the life of King David, the greatest king and arguably the greatest human character, with apologies to Abraham and Moses, in the Hebrew Scriptures. We will learn quite a bit from David's life. There's much wisdom to be gleaned, both from his rise and his fall as a king. But before we get to David, we first need to put his life and times in context. And the best way I know to do that is to introduce you to two people who are so important in David's story. The first is Samuel, who we will meet today, and then the second is Saul, who we will meet next week. Samuel's story begins at a point in Israel's history when the people of God are living in the promised land. They have come out of Egypt, they've wandered through the wilderness, they've been led by Moses, led by Joshua. Now they are in the promised land, and they are led by a series of charismatic, heroic figures, some of them quite famous, that emerge in response to a repetitive series of events. It usually begins with unfaithful Israel, and Israel always struggles to be faithful to God. Unfaithful Israel gets in trouble with an enemy, the Philistines or maybe the Midianites. They get in trouble, and they cry out to God for deliverance, and God is faithful even when they're unfaithful, and he raises up one of these heroic characters, we call them judges, to lead God's people in battle to defeat their enemies. And this happens over and over and over again. The people of God just never learn. Unfaithful get in trouble, cry out for deliverance. God raises up a judge to save. Unfaithful cry out. God is faithful and saves. And we read about the exploits of these judges in the book known as, you guessed it, Judges. And the end of the book of Judges ends on a particularly dark and depressing note. Israel is in a state of absolute chaos. In Judges chapters 19 through 21, I'll let you read on your own a gruesome story that shows just how bad things are in Israel during this time. Frankly, it's a story that I find to be unpreachable in a gathering like this where little ears are present. In fact, we will encounter and gloss over some other stories in the life and times of David that, in my judgment, are best not read out loud in church, if you know what I mean. And as we read or summarize these stories, we have to keep in mind that the events depicted in these stories are 3,000 years old. And they took place in a brutal and violent Iron Age tribal culture that is very much unlike our own. And we have to exert some extra energy, put in some extra work, show extra patience to read these stories in their own time and on their own terms, rather than quickly or automatically dismissing and canceling them because they offend our modern Christian sensibilities. And it is good that they offend our modern Christian sensibilities. You've heard me say before, it is entirely appropriate and really unavoidable for us to read these ancient stories set in a very different culture as Christians through the lens of what Jesus Christ has revealed to us about God. And I will continue to remind you throughout this series that it is the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, not the life of David. It is the example of Christ, not the example of David, that is ultimately revealing God to us, revealing God's will for God's people. While I can't preach Judges 19 through 21, I can preach the final verse of chapter 21, which is Judges 21, verse 25. And this is how the book of Judges comes to a close. It says, in those days, Israel had no king. And so everyone did as they saw fit. Some translations say everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And this is both a geopolitical and a theological statement. In those days, Israel had no stable, sustained leadership. They had no king on earth, no one who could establish and maintain order in the land. They had no one who would lead them consistently in battle against their enemies. They had no king on earth, but they also had no king in heaven. Well, they had a king in heaven, but they didn't recognize God as their king. They were not seeking to do God's will on earth as it is in heaven, and so everyone did what they saw fit. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And so it is a very dark time in Israel's history. Israel is a dark place to be during this time. But just because it's dark doesn't mean that God isn't at work. And this is what we see in 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you have your Bibles, I would invite you to turn there. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, it begins with a woman who can't get pregnant. This is a familiar theme running throughout the scriptures. And when you're reading your Bibles and you come upon a story about a woman who can't get pregnant, you know that God is on the move, that something important is about to happen. And this particular woman's name is Hannah. Her husband is Elkanah. Elkanah's other wife, yes, he has two wives, it was 3,000 years ago, very different culture. His other wife is named, her name really doesn't matter. What matters is that she has kids and Hannah doesn't, which gives her most favored wife status over Hannah. And every year, Elkanah takes his family to Shiloh, where the Ark of the Lord, you know, the one from the movie? That movie is 40 years old, by the way. Some of you are very, very old. He would take his family to Shiloh, where the Ark of the Lord was housed, so that he could offer appropriate sacrifices. And one year, Hannah's rival, the one with all the kids, she provokes and bullies and makes fun of Hannah until she's reduced to tears. And Elkanah loves Hannah. And he does his very best to comfort her. He says, "Oh, honey, why are you crying? Aren't I better than 10 sons? I mean, I know you don't have any kids, but come on, honey, at least you have me." And strange as that may sound, this brings her no comfort. She continues to cry. And from the pit of despair, she makes a vow to the Lord. She says, "If you will just give me a son, I promise I will give him back to you." And about this time, Eli, who is the priest serving at the Lord's house, sees her praying there. We pick up the story in chapter 1, verse 13. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli, the priest, thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." This story is full of sensitive men. "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." And Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. Not long after that, Hannah became pregnant. And she gave birth to a son whom she named Samuel, which means God has heard, or asked of God. And when Samuel, the baby, is weaned, Hannah makes good on her promise, and she takes her little boy, maybe just a little more than a toddler, she takes him to Shiloh, and she gives him to Eli so that her son can grow up serving in the house of the Lord. And every year she visits Samuel and she brings him a new cloak. It's 1 year bigger. And God is good to Hannah and she has more children. And Eli, or Samuel, grows up in the house of the Lord. Now Eli, the priest, also has two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, and they are no good. Seriously, they are terrible. They have no regard for the holy things of God. They show contempt for the people of God. They do despicable things in the eyes of the Lord. And Eli the priest does nothing to correct their bad behavior. When God has had enough, he sends a prophet to Eli and tells him, your household is coming under judgment. What that means for Eli is that both of his sons are going to die on the same day, and that Eli is going to lose his priestly ministry at the house of the Lord. It will be taken from him and given to someone else. But meanwhile, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 26, the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. He grew in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. That sounds vaguely familiar, doesn't it? At the beginning of chapter 3, Samuel, the one whose name means heard by God, hears from God for the very first time. This is how it goes down, beginning in verse 1. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli, and in those days the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down to his usual place. Down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the house of the Lord where the ark was. And then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, here I am. And he ran to Eli and said, here I am, you called me. But Eli said, I did not call. Go back and lie down. So he went and lay down. Now this happened two more times. And after the third time, in verse 8, Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, go and lie down, and if he calls you, say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood there, meaning I think an angel of the Lord came, calling as at the other times, Samuel, Samuel. And then Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. And the Lord tells Samuel, who is still a young boy, what he's going to do to Eli and his sons. It is a heavy first word from the Lord for a boy to hear. And of course, the next morning, the old man wants to know, what did God say to you? Samuel reluctantly tells him the truth. And Eli accepts the truth of God's judgment on his household. And from that time on, the story says that God spoke to and through Samuel so that he became a mighty prophet among the people of God. And as we'll see in coming weeks, Samuel grows up to be a grumpy old man. Maybe because God used him so much as a prophet of doom. He was constantly delivering bad news to people like Eli and his family. In chapter 4 of 1 Samuel, God makes good on his word and he judges Eli's household. Both his sons are killed in a battle against the Philistines. And in the process, they foolishly bring the Ark of the Lord out to the battlefield, and the Philistines capture it as well. And when Eli learns that he's not only lost both of his sons, but the Ark of the Lord has been captured by the Philistines, he falls over backwards off his chair, breaks his neck, and dies. Thus ends the ministry of Eli, the prophet, or the priest of God. Now fast forward to chapter 7, but go back and read what's in between chapter 4 and chapter 7. It's a great story. Fast forward to chapter 7, and the Philistines bring the Ark of the Lord back to Israel. They give it back. Apparently they hadn't watched the movie, and they did not appreciate the Ark's dreadful power when they took it. So when Israel gets the Ark of the Lord back, they learn their lesson in this latest bout of unfaithfulness, which caused the ark to be taken in the first place, and they turn to the Lord. And Samuel, prophet that he is, commands them to put away their idols, their false gods, and to worship the Lord with all their hearts. And so the people gather in a solemn assembly, and they confess their sins to the Lord. But when the Philistines, their enemies, see the Israelites gathered, this huge gathering of people, they see it as an opportune time to attack. And the Israelites are terrified. And they turn to Samuel. And they beg him to intercede, to call on the name of the Lord. And Samuel does. He cries out to God on behalf of the people. And the original God of thunder hears and responds. And he throws the Philistines into a confusing panic with a mighty thunderstorm. And the Israelites rout their enemy. And all of this solidifies Samuel, who's now a man, Samuel's leadership among the people. And this ushers in a season of peace for the people of God in their land. And so Samuel fulfills a unique role in Israel. Unlike any leader that had come before him, he was a priest. He interceded for the people of God. He was also a prophet. He spoke for God to the people. And he was a judge. He led God's people in battle against their enemies. And as we will see next week, he became a king maker and a king breaker. He'll anoint two kings. The second will be the ideal against which all other kings in Israel are measured, at least until Jesus. First is a huge disappointment. And that's next week's story. But today, before we move on from Samuel to Saul and then to David, let's dwell just a bit longer in Samuel's rise as the leader over Israel. Samuel is both the answer to a desperate mother's prayer and the solution to a broken nation's problem. And in both instances, it's a faithful God who shows that he's still doing his best work in the dark when things are at their worst by giving the people of God exactly what they need in their time of trouble. Samuel is just the right person at just the right time. Now fast forward 1,000 years past Samuel. Once again, the people of God are in a dark place. They're ruled, governed by an idol-worshiping king. It's called Caesar. Their land is occupied by foreign soldiers. Their own leaders are compromised and corrupt and self-seeking. The people go to the temple in Jerusalem and they cry out for deliverance. They long for God once again to raise up a unique leader who can lead them in battle against their enemies, defeat their foes, restore peace to their land, bring order out of the chaos. And once again, God gives his people a child, whom Luke says in Luke chapter 2, verse 52, grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and people. Now, where have we heard that before? This boy grows into a man, and he's a prophet. He speaks for God to the people, but he's also a priest. He intercedes on the people of God's behalf, and he fights and wins a battle, the ultimate victory over the enemies of the people of God. Now, of course, he does not defeat the Roman army. He does not do battle with Roman soldiers. When he fights against the true enemies, not only of Israel, but all people everywhere. He fights on behalf of the whole world. He defeats the enemies of sin and death and the forces of evil that wreak havoc in the world and bring all kinds of chaos. At just the right time, God brings into the world just the right person to meet the need. Jesus is both an answer to a desperate people's prayer for deliverance, and he is the solution to a broken world's problem. And as it was with Samuel, so it is with Jesus, and we believe so it is with us. Fast forward 2,000 years from Jesus, and here we are. And let us take heart and find comfort and strength in this truth. When the need is the greatest, when the despair is the deepest, when the world is at its most chaotic and troubled, when the night is the darkest, God hears, God responds, and God gives his people exactly what they need in their time of trouble. May we, like Hannah, continue to cry out to the Lord. Cry out to the Lord in our disappointment, in our heartbreak, in our pain. And maybe the pain is so great that we move our lips and we can't make sounds. We just cry from the heart. May you continue to cry out in your own personal darkness. May you hand over to the Lord whatever burden it is you brought with you today. Maybe you're the only one that knows about it. You're the only one who knows how much trouble you're in right now, how much pain you're in right now. The only one that knows how much chaos is swirling in your heart or in your home. May you, like Hannah, cry out to the Lord, not just with words, but with your heart. And may we collectively continue to cry out to the Lord, to cry out for justice, for mercy, for healing, for peace, for salvation. May we continue to cry out to God that God would fix whatever is broken, that God would repair and restore whatever is not right in his good world. And may we trust that God still hears and that God still responds and that God is still doing some of his very best work in the dark. And may we, on the other side of this, be able to say, Samuel, God has heard.